Hello everybody, here's a recap of highlights over the last month. The War Machine app received a series of updates over the past few weeks, fixing bugs and adding functionality. We're looking forward to the library function and full rules being integrated this week. And speaking of the app, the Thornfall Alliance Prime Legacy Army showed up last week, marking the third army for mercenaries. As a bonus, a Prime Legacy bundle for the Thornfall Alliance was added to the ongoing Black Friday sale on the Privateer Press online store, so if you're looking to fill your Thornfall Alliance force, make sure you don't miss the amazing 60% savings on that deal. And don't forget, all orders over $100 ship free to Canada, Australia, the UK, EU, and everywhere in the United States. In a week already packed with news, we also saw the Steamroller 2023 packet go online. So if you're a tournament player, make sure to check out the update for the official Mark IV events starting next week. We also had a Monsterpocalypse Errata update that addressed a few problematic interactions that have come up recently. So check out that before the next downtown beatdown. We announced the winner to the Alexia Queen of the Dam miniature painting contest this week. Mark Stanisnek took the prize with his Twilight palette and glow-up base, a wonderful paint job and basing display. Very moody and on point for Alexia. We also wanted to thank everyone who participated with all of your amazing Alexia entries and want to give a shout out to Rogues Gallery Comics and Games, the store nominated to receive the Mark IV banner. And last, lots of progress was reported on the upcoming Sea Raiders and Storm Legion army starters. Shipments have arrived, we're packing like crazy. Those, along with those sweet House Cullis preview battle groups, are going to be shipping out soon, so if you're looking forward to getting in on that first wave of Dusk previews, make sure you order fast! And of course, happy holidays, and to a bright new year! Hello everyone and welcome back. There has been so much to cover and so many updates. Joining me on this episode is none other than Matt Wilson himself to help me put a cap on this year's Primecast and look forward into the future of what's to come. How you doing, Matt?
Great, Manuel. Happy holidays.
Yes, we got to play some holiday music on the intro coming in, feeling nice and festive. What are you hoping for under the tree this year?
I'm hoping for a Storm Legion army box.
Excellent. I think we all are. So there's been a lot going on. You want to fill us in?
Yeah, well, the end of November ended up being a huge convergence of different War Machine things, and It's not slowing down. But it does feel good that we're crossing off some big milestones, and pretty soon I think it's going to feel like we're back to cruising speed.
Well, let's start with Steamroller. The annual update is always a big deal for everyone that participates in tournaments. Steamroller is often like the format that gives form and context to the rest of the army building and playing experience.
It is. And it's been one of the things occupying a huge amount of the development team's attention over the past few months. Like everything, we would have loved to have more time for it. But in this case, I think that the time constraints actually ended up pushing us toward a better outcome than we might have landed on if we had necessarily had all the time that we wanted.
That's not usually how things go. What do you mean by that?
We had originally intended to do a much more dramatic overhaul of Steamroller. With Mark IV, we've set a big goal to focus on narrative play and campaigns, and we were bringing that to Steamroller, which historically is a bit more abstract in the scenarios. And, for good reason, right? Tournaments are complicated, and the real intention of Steamroller is to keep everyone on the same page. So whether you're playing a tournament at your local game store or you're flying around the world for an event, you always know what you're getting into, and event organizers know what they need to put these events together. So it ends up sacrificing some of the narrative aspects of scenarios, and it puts some limitations on how complexly you can design the tabletops with terrain and such, but it's good for the competitive environment where the participants are really playing to win.
And that's different than what you had in mind?
Yeah, the direction that we were headed upped the complexity for scenarios for sure, as well as the resource requirements for laying out tables. And as we started sharing the scenarios and the format ideas with the playtesters that were helping us out, as well as some completely untested and raw ideas that were tried out at Warfare Weekend, we were getting a lot of feedback that people were excited for these new ideas that we're trying out, and they wanted to experience more like them. But at the same time, we were seeing concerns over the complexity of point scoring, of potentially longer game length, and of the resources that might be needed to host events. And so as we got closer to our end of November deadline, we realized that the direction that we were exploring was interesting and exciting, and people were going to enjoy it, but it wasn't Steamroller in the sense that where we might end up might not support the competitive tournaments the way that Steamroller is designed to. So we spent a lot of time discussing the feedback we were getting from our playtesters. We sat down with some of them to discuss things in depth, and then finally came to the conclusion that what the first year of a new edition of War Machine really needed for competitive play was a familiar environment that players already understand.
Absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. There's so much to learn, and learning a new edition, then learning a whole new steamroller on top of that would be a mountain of things for people to have to process. And even introducing new models, there are things that you have to be able to identify on the tabletop and know what it does. And with the modularity of warjacks and warcasters now, there is definitely some things that are added to that layer of complexity. And so keeping it simple and, tried and true with what we have been doing makes a lot of sense.
Exactly. So in the end, we basically took Steamroller 2021 and updated it to be compatible with the rules changes in Mark IV and the app functionality that provides the foundation for the game. And we really didn't deviate from what we know has worked in the past.
So what about the other stuff, the narrative scenarios and the new format? That's been really exciting to hear about.
Yeah, the feedback we got on that stuff was actually by and large really positive. We know that where we're headed is something that War Machine players want, but we also know it's not Steamroller. So we're going to continue to work on these new ideas, but with the idea that they will be used for different events, not as a replacement or overhaul to Steamroller. We'll be sharing some of those scenarios and ideas through the app in the months ahead, and we'll be trying them out at events like Adepticon and Gen Con over this next year. And we'll see how people respond to a sort of new direction of play. I think we'll find the best direction for everything there.
I can't wait to get some more time with them because they are a ton of fun. But I can see why the development team has made the decision they did. And now you said we might see them in the War Machine app. Let's talk more about that.
Yeah, the War Machine app continues to evolve. The beta phase is, as everyone knows, a process of refinement. You know, things keep getting smoother, functionality is coming online. You know, we were expecting the full library functions last week, but getting the rules into the app has been a much bigger task than it originally seemed like it would be. So now we're expecting the library to come online this week. You know, it's not just like you upload a PDF the way you can to the website. It's a really big part of the app to be able to store and display articles, heck, books, you know, in a responsive design that will work across all of the different platforms. But like I mentioned in the update last week, as we were solving the issues of getting the rules into the app, we took that time and went back and revised all the diagram graphics and future-proofed them so that when we're able to start localization in other languages in the future, it's going to be a much smoother process. So there's kind of a silver lining to that delay.
What else are we going to see in the library besides the rules?
Well, once we have the rules in the app, we will also move any other important documents into it, like Steamroller, and then we can start uploading all the lore articles. So they're centralized in one library. It'll feel like having a, you know, the complete core book in the palm of your hands. And then hopefully before the end of February next year, we will start the subscription service with weekly content updates.
Weekly content updates. What kind of things are we going to get with the subscription?
Well, there are sort of two components to the subscription. First, you're going to get the expanded storage space for more Force builds. You're also going to be able to access your info from any device running the app because your info will be stored in cloud storage instead of locally on your device. And this is going to be especially cool once the app is running on desktop and you can go from your phone to your PC to a tablet, however you want.
Absolutely. That sounds amazing. I love accessibility like that. It saves me from having to transfer it all myself. So it seems worth the subscription right there.
For sure. But we've got some other cool functions that we're working on for the subscriptions as well. And then there's also the weekly content. So every month we'll have a cycle of fiction, new scenarios, lore that dives into the backgrounds of the characters and the workings of the different armies and their technology or abilities. And then there will be a new chapter in an ongoing narrative campaign every month, which is something that we've never done like this before. And I'm super excited about that.
A narrative campaign sounds awesome. Can you tell us anything about it?
Yeah, the narrative campaign will parallel the fiction that we'll be publishing every month, starting with the Orgoth invasion. So you're playing out scenarios that reflect the events that the Iron Kingdom is going through as the Orgoth storm their shores and the mainland. And we're actually working with John of War Budgies, who you've had on the show a couple of times. If anybody who's seen his Jericho Reach campaign that he created for Warcaster knows how awesome he is at this kind of thing. So it's been great to start that process with him and dive into this campaign.
Absolutely. Love John, love War Budgies. I was just talking to him earlier today, so and I really loved his Jericho Reach campaign. I think it had a lot of clever ideas, and War Budgies did so many amazing things with that. So, not to jump tracks, but what's going on with Warcaster? Can I poke you for some of that?
Yeah, well, we're working with John on a lot of new Warcaster stuff as well, including an organized play league for 2023 and the development of a couple new armies that we've sort of alluded to, one of which we showed off some concept art for in last month's Primecast Plus.
The Lost Legion.
Yep. And that was just the tip of their spear, so to speak. So there's going to be a lot more next year where that came from.
Tell us about them.
The Lost Legion, it's an all robot army built by humans as a military force many, many decades ago, back before they moved away from using artificial intelligence. And at the time, of course, the Legion wasn't lost, but this particular army was assigned to protect Floration Colony on the edge of the Hyper-Uranian. And then something happens and they get cut off from the martial world that they came from. So when they come back, it's going to be a real event, part of something much bigger than just showing back up after a bunch of years missing.
Intrigue.
Course.
So, Matt, with organized play in our crosshairs, can we talk a little bit about the Monster Apocalypse organized play coming up?
Yeah, we're just getting ready to send out the information on the Dimensional Doorway League that is coming up. So that'll be arriving March.
I'm excited. Keep your eyes peeled on Privateer social media for more information on that. That is almost too much stuff to process at one time.
I know, it's a lot. I think I am about running on empty here. So why don't you roll the drums?
Roll drums. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. In this segment, we're going to talk some Monster Apocalypse. I brought on Brett, Rob, and Marin to this episode because we just had the Kaiju Classic and they helped run it, and first and second place player are also here. So, Brett, Rob, and Marin, why don't you say hello?
Hi, I'm Brett. Happy to be here.
Hi, I'm Rob. Happy to be here. Excited to be here.
I'm Marin, and I am also happy to be here.
Awesome. I am glad to have you all here. We get to talk pretty regularly, always hang out on the Discord for Monster Apocalypse. And there was a lot of excitement around being able to do this event because we hosted it through Discord. And so, Brett, you were the host of this recent Kaiju Classic, which was a Monster Apocalypse 3-day weekend of games where we crowned a new Kaiju Classic champion. We had a whole bunch of trophies where people got to put the names on their plaques for those respective events and got to play a lot of Monster Apocalypse. So, Brett, why don't you break it down and tell us a little bit more about this recent Kaiju Classic?
For sure. So this was another 3-day format like last time. We changed it up a little bit, just, you know, to kind of mess with the digital format and lead into it a little bit more. So last time we just did like straight casual games on the Friday. This time we had the speedrun event as well, which was a Megaton Mashup 1 scenario where players competed against the clock to get the fastest time in groups of two. And then we had the Crush Hour, the classic, on Saturday. And then we finished it off with Who's the Boss on Sunday.
The speedrun event was a special scenario that Brett and I had whipped up together to make it difficult for players to unpack, but not extremely difficult, so that we could have players potentially play it more than once. And we definitely had that. Marin, I believe you took best speedrun time.
Well, actually, it was collectively me and Rob, which sealed the fate of what we'll talk about in a moment. But yeah, so the speedrun was, it involved the classic Megaton Mashup co-op, which is why we could do it in groups of two. Mucustos and leaning into Mucustos, who's a new destroyer who'd come out, his ability to sort of spam out units. The board just gets littered with razor beetles. It was a lot of fun. I like playing Monsterpocalypse sort of vaguely solo, so having someone to play with me but who wasn't an immediate adversary was a lot of fun, to have a unique challenging scenario that you could design a strategy around was very fun.
Cooperative portion of it was probably my favorite portions, because it is interesting and new scenario to try and play the game that we love in a different way.
That is one of the great things about Megaton Mashup 1, is being able to cooperatively take down an enemy monster. And one of the cool things about the format, really, is that you can put any monster as the villain. It doesn't have to be what we use Mucustos for this event, and we will probably use a different monster for the next event. But anybody at their home kitchen table wanting to play with their friend or their kids can sit down and take any monster off their shelf and be like, this is our villain. And I think that's a really neat experience.
Yeah, I agree. And I've always thought it like felt kind of fun and different for something for a con, which is kind of why I pitched it. But like, man, that was so many beetles, guys.
An inordinate number of beetles.
That's why this format really could only be, you know, leaned into with the digital aspect that we did with this Kaiju Classic, because having to build and paint that many beetles would be difficult.
Are you saying you don't keep 45 razor beetles on hand, fully painted, ready to go?
True. Yeah, because you only have a tenth of what you need for that scenario.
So let's talk about the day two event. We did Crush Hour, but we did it a little differently. Brett, why don't you tell them how we changed it?
Yeah, so what we did for Crush Hour was we actually messed with the list building restrictions. So we had all the players bring 3 monsters, 30 units, and 14 buildings. And then after they'd rolled off for first and second and selected the map, they got to trim those lists down to the conventional two monsters, 20 units, and 12 buildings for a Crush Hour list. It's kind of like a cool thing just to try out.
What are some of the advantages to doing that, Brett?
So the big one that, like, the way I personally envisioned it, which is interestingly not the way that it got played, was I liked to swap my list between first and second unit packages. So the idea being that if I knew I was going first, I would lean heavier into units that secure buildings and sit on power points, and I could cut some of those attackers. Where if I was going second, I would lean very heavily into an attacking package and just really try to disrupt my opponent.
Interesting. So, Marin, what was your approach when going into this event?
My approach going into this event was that, frankly, I had some big ideas about some goofy stuff that I would do, and then practice game completely face planted. So I fell back and was like, I'm going to just play things that I'm comfortable with. And what I did is I picked 3 monsters who I know I'm good with and who I know play well together. And when I went up against my opponents, I just picked whichever pair of those monsters I think would do best against whichever pair of their monsters I thought they would pick.
I was actually going to ask a little bit about that, Marin. Because you, when I was watching the games, the only time I saw you play Karkinos was when you went first. Was that deliberate or was that strictly matchup driven?
There was a little bit of, I favored Karkinos going first because Karkinos has the play that I attempted and missed in that game, where you can potentially use her steamroller rule to get D damage on your opponent as first player, and then her, because she's got grappler and fireproof as well, their retaliation options are very limited. So she was, I did favor her going first and UCK going second, Ultra Cybercon going second. Let's not abbreviate so that people actually know what I'm talking about. And sort of pivoting my pairing around my other monster, which was the King of Kamazots, who everyone here knows is my boy.
Interesting. And so we ended up deciding the finals for the Kaiju Classic Champion on this format with the same three monsters, 30 units, and 14 buildings. Rob, you got to play in that match. What were your thoughts building lists going into this format?
So I was in a very similar mindset to Marin on that. I picked three monsters that I was really comfortable with and I'm comfortable to play style of, and decided, well, apparently wrongly because of how thoroughly Marin backed me around that game. Yeah, I tried to decide based on the unit game was a little more the tools I figured I would want, so I could pick and choose depending on the matchup. But no, it was overall very fun. I like that style a lot, actually.
I really like the event. It's one of my favorite new formats, even in person. Being able to play with an extra monster, even if it's not in your list, to think about it, to have it considered in your synergies. I really like that headspace for lists, and it makes me want to play more and play more monsters and get more out of those pairs. And then I also like what Brett said about being able to tailor your unit list based on being able to go first or going second, or even if I'm going to use one of my unit generals versus I'm not going to use one of my unit generals and I want a different unit loadout because maybe I don't need multiples of a specific unit. And so the flexibility of the format, I think, allows players to be more creative both within their list building and table side, because there's some of that heart pounding, you know, 5 minutes where you get to build your list, where you get to think about what is the map, what is my opponent's monsters, what problem am I trying to solve, what problem am I trying to create here. And I really like that headspace.
It is really nice to be able to bring more to the table of your collection. I think that's really nice.
I've been looking for a way to get more units into lists. This felt like kind of a nice middle ground for that.
Absolutely. So, you know, being able to pick some of those units that you wouldn't necessarily bring in your core 20, but you could find the right use cases for, the right matchups for. And I think that's what this format was all about. And so I hope it catches on. I hope more players get into it because it's a really fun format to think about. Rob, Marin, why don't you tell us about how that final match goes? Rob, you kind of alluded to the fact that you got smacked around a little bit, but what were some of the catalysts to that match, Marin?
I think the biggest one was me bringing the Magistrate and some of the unit tricks that I used, because I knew I was going first and I wanted Power Dice in case Rob, who was playing on the Protector side and really only had access to one tool to get to my back line, and the Magistrate's objection action could completely counteract that. So I did a trick that was probably more cute than good in using a Verota Walker, which has a special ability that allows it to spawn extra units out to secure the reclamation facility, which has the powerful recycle action, and then use that recycle action on the expensive but otherwise fairly useless Verota Walker to have a bunch of power dice in my pool before he even took a turn, which put him on the back foot from the start. And then I was just running my most comfortable King of Kamazots monster paired with arguably one of the strongest monsters in the game in the Magistrate.
My early game target selection also wasn't great. I probably should have went in on Magistrate instead of going in on Cam, but I'm always afraid of the alpha and healing back in. So I made a point to get rid of some downtown high rises early on. And one of the big things was I forgot to bring a clicker that game. So I did only have access to Blitz. So most of the fighting ended up happening on my side of the.
If you were able to rewind time, knowing what you know, how the match went down, would you change your list at all, Rob?
I definitely would have brought back Clicker that game, that's for sure. I do really like the idea of doing Destroyers for this. I'm a big fan of the Necroscourge package, and I think it's really something really cool you could do if you're going second. You know they're going to be going to try and disrupt their power base to be able to swap into a Necroscourge package as opposed to maybe something a little more secure and heavy. So if going forward, definitely some more tailoring choices I think I'd make on Protector side. And I do like the first, second difference between for Destroyers.
Awesome. So Brett, We did also have a painting competition, as painting is required, whether it be digital or not, for any kaiju classic. And if you really want to, if history has shown us anything from the past kaiju classics, if you want to be champion, you have to participate in the painting competition. And the playoffs is almost always between players who participated, and the ones who fall out are the ones who don't.
Absolutely. If we're calling out painting contest winners, like that's Rob. He placed either first or I think 1 second in every category.
Yeah, second in building.
Yeah, and then also took down the painting champion for the event. So like Rob is proof positive there for sure.
Absolutely. And that's what the part of that event was geared for, right? Is we wanted players to participate in all the different aspects of the hobby, and for a painter to be like, oh, you know what? I went really hard at this and it did get me into the finals. Like that kind of stuff matters in Monsterpocalypse because it's such a beautiful game, and to see all the beautiful models together really does just do it justice. So Rob, thank you for those awesome entries as well. It was really great to get to share them on Primecast Plus and show everybody what a great job you did.
Yeah, I've always loved painting, and I'm happy to show off everything that I do. I've been joking ever since the event that I lost every single game that I played that weekend, but I painted really well, so I got to the finals.
Well, it was nice to see it all the same. We also had a day three event, and we played Who's the Boss on day three, which was a format we created just for the Kaiju Classic. So Brett, why don't you tell us a little bit about how Who's the Boss went?
Sure. So Who's the Boss is our kind of fun-filled Monpoc format. The way it works is we've got an online wheel through monpoc.net. And then the players spin the wheel twice, get two monsters, build some lists, and go at it. Yeah, it's always a lot of fun. You get some like really, really bad combinations, some really good ones. It's always interesting.
We had change in this event from our previous Who's the Boss and previous Who's the Boss for the Kaiju Classic. You only got one of your monsters, and the other monster was part of your list that you built. And so you kind of picked your agenda and list ahead of time. But in this one, we let players get both of their monsters at random. And there were some funky pairs that came out of it. Anybody here get some of those funky pairs? I know I did.
Round one, I got a really spicy one. It was Master of Shalott and then someone else. But I was playing Destroyer, so it was really cool to be able to drop down a Temple Giant with my Juror as my Quorum units.
Nice.
I was busy giving people coffee that day, so I don't have any fun Who's the Boss pairs. But the pairs that I saw listed in the Discord were very entertaining, for sure.
I got a lot of the same faction pairs. Like, it was really weird. I got Mecha Maxim and Ultra Cybercon at the same time. And I felt like I was just playing regular Monpoc while everybody else was playing, like, really crazy stuff. But it was fun to explore pairs that you're not always like, oh, this is my default pair. We brought up how fun the Necroscourge package is, and I have done quite a bit of playing Ultra Cybercon with Zor Necros. And so to go back and play him with Mecha Maxim again was a fun and refreshing way to play that list.
Yeah, that was the same round that, Rob, you got Zaxxor Rastaban. Like, that was some spice. Were you two that playing in that spicy round too?
I think we did play together.
Yeah, I think.
I know we played once.
We did. And it went really well for me.
It's definitely been a long time since I put either Rastaban or Zaxxor on the table.
Both amazing monsters, by the way. Both monsters who went through the dynamic update process as well.
I actually got a lot of DU monsters this time around. I got Zaxxor, I got Rastaban, I got Nova the one round. Definitely had me relearning some monsters I haven't touched in a while.
So I think that wraps up our recap of the Kaiju Classic and the different events and getting to play in it. Are there any parting shots that any of you have that you'd like to say while you have the mic on Primecast?
Just a big shout out to Mimi from Power Gorged, who did our paint judging.
Like, absolutely. She did.
Saved us so much, so much. Mimi was the hero of that event.
100%. Super organized. Great to have her as a judge. 100% we'll do it again. Marin, how about you?
My takeaway from the event is there's no substitute for playing what you're comfortable with. Just because something is good, just because you've thought something through or people have told you something is strong, sometimes it just pays to play the thing that you know you can play.
Absolutely. How about you, Rob? What was your takeaway?
It was a great event, a lot of fun. I just wanted to shout out all the other painters who submitted for the painting competition. There's some really incredible work out there. Some really incredible work out there. It's No Howard and Chef Dog in the Discord. They both put in some really incredible stuff. Beyond that, is it okay if I shout out an event coming up?
Yeah, please go ahead.
There's going to be an event at Captain Con this year. It's going to be February 3rd through the 5th in Rhode Island, Warwick, Rhode Island. Captain Con, our own Tecactus, Jeff Gum's going to be hosting the event, and we're hoping to get a bunch of people this time.
Awesome. That's really exciting to hear. I'm super excited to see how that one comes out. I know that once players start getting out and competing, it becomes an addiction. I know it was for me to want to go back out and just keep playing. So I'm looking forward to seeing more people share pictures on the Facebook and Discord of them playing games. That we've been seeing a lot of that lately, and I'm super excited to see that. Speaking of, there is something coming for organized play for Monsterpocalypse very soon, and so keep your eyes peeled for what it's going to be. You'll be able to see it sooner than later.
Ooh, very exciting.
Yeah, hype for this product.
Super interested to see how this turns out.
It's always nice when you have a bunch of playtesters on the podcast, because they're all like, oh, we know what's coming. Haha, in the podcast.
I mean, that's not true. Marin and I can't do the drums out thing. We've proved that a couple times.
I thought I was being coy.
I always laugh. I mean, you always get me to laugh. Rob, you want to say roll drums?
Roll drums.